The new Omicron strain is starting to spread around the world, and vaccine maker Moderna says existing doses will be less effective against it. Why is the new virus variant called Omicron? Because the World Health Organization skipped two other choices. The latter option has the same pronunciation as a common Chinese surname. A new report says at least seven countries are quietly supporting a Taiwanese military project. That says a 10-day U.S. military drill concludes near the region, all in effort to deter a Chinese invasion. China's Taishan nuclear power plant has taken damage, but exactly how much? A whistleblower says it's nearly 15 times worse than the communist regime's report suggests. And the UK is listing its defense priorities, and China is at the top. In a rare speech, the chief of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service labeled China as its single greatest priority. Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. The newly discovered Omicron variant has a record number of mutations, and the CEO of Moderna predicts that vaccines will be less effective against it. This as the new strain spreads around the world. NTD's Don Ma has more.
More than a dozen countries around the world have confirmed cases of the Omicron variant. And the latest, the British government confirmed on Tuesday that 13 cases have appeared in England. That's as the head of the EU's public health agency said that 42 cases of the variant have been confirmed across 10 European Union countries. In Hong Kong, authorities have identified three people with the Omicron variant through mandatory testing while in quarantine. The city has also banned non-residents from entering from four African countries. And starting Thursday, non-residents who have been to Australia, Canada, Germany, and six other nations within the past 21 days will not be allowed to enter Hong Kong. Close to 70% in the city are fully vaccinated. Canada, Australia, Japan, and Israel also discovered cases of the variant inside their borders. Last week, the World Health Organization designated Omicron as a variant of concern. That's the most serious label the WHO has used on a variant. Preliminary evidence suggests there may be an increased risk of reinfection with Omicron, meaning people who previously contracted the virus could become reinfected more easily. The variant contains a record-breaking number of mutations, which could potentially lower the effectiveness of vaccines. The CEO of vaccine maker Moderna told the Financial Times Tuesday that existing vaccines will be much less effective against Omicron, saying he thinks it's going to be a material drop, adding that he just doesn't know how much. Scientists still have limited information about Omicron. But a number of red flags suggests that this variant could be the most infectious strain yet. Don Ma, NTD News.
The Chinese communist regime hasn't reported any cases of the Omicron variant so far. But due to the regime's history of covering up and underreporting cases, NTD cannot independently verify this number. About 20% of China's population have not been vaccinated, as per the National Health Commission. And only Chinese homegrown vaccines are available to regular Chinese citizens. The new COVID-19 variant got its name Omicron after the World Health Organization skipped two letters of the alphabet in an effort to avoid misunderstanding and potential anger. The naming system for key variants consists of Greek letters. This was decided by the WHO earlier this year. The organization said it's easier to say and remember, and it avoids focusing on a place or certain group of people related to the variants. According to this system, Nu should have been the letter next in line for the latest variant, but it was too similar to the word new. So the WHO moved to the next letter, Xi, sometimes also written as KSI. The WHO says it skipped over Xi because it is a common last name. This is true. This is a Chinese last name. Hundreds of thousands of people in China are surnamed Xi, among them the most well-known, the head of the CCP, Xi Jinping. Now we turn to the zero COVID policy. Both mainland China and Hong Kong have this policy, implementing heavy controls in an effort to eliminate the virus. In China, this leads to police violence and extremely strict lockdown measures. And in Hong Kong, it may not go as far, but it also damages the city on a large scale. Hong Kong implemented the policy to align with mainland China, which it depends on for economic growth. But on the other hand, this is driving foreign talent out of the financial hub. That's as many top professionals try to avoid the city's draconian quarantine regulations. Hong Kong-based freight company Regal World Transport System says that jobs to relocate people out of Hong Kong increased by 30 to 40% over the past 1.5 years, while some clients had even reached out from overseas, asking them to move their belongings out of the city. Right now, many non-residents are not allowed into Hong Kong, while returning residents have to undergo anywhere between 2 weeks to a month of quarantine, often at their own cost. A government spokesman in Hong Kong says the zero infections policy is based on the overall interest of the Hong Kong community. Hong Kong and mainland China remain among the few places sticking to a zero tolerance policy on any virus infections. Communist China Xi Jinping is pledging to send a whopping 1 billion doses of vaccines to Africa. That says countries on the continent try to come to grips with the new Omicron variant. In a speech on Monday, Xi said the move is to help Africa reach a vaccination rate of 60%, adding that China will never forget its deep friendship with the African nations. China has close ties with many African countries, and over the years, it has pumped a considerable amount of money into the region. On Monday, it promised to invest another $10 billion. Africa is also China's key import source of crude oil and minerals. Xi said during his speech that over the next 3 years, imports from Africa would reach $300 billion. Xi's announcement is part of China's continuing effort in what many have coined Beijing's vaccine diplomacy. That, alongside the nation's effort to elevate its image on the world stage as a responsible country helping to fight the pandemic. But it appears India could be competing with China for Africa's favor. On the heels of Xi Jinping's speech, the Indian Foreign Ministry released a statement saying the government of India stands ready to support the countries affected in Africa in dealing with the Omicron variant, including by supplies of made-in-India vaccines. The U.S. and Japan's maritime forces completed 10 days of joint military drills in Asian waters, together with other allies. They said on Tuesday that it was a show of strength aimed at deterring China.
Ready, set, takeoff. Fighter jets from the U.S. 7th Fleet are soaring in the Indo-Pacific. That's as the U.S. wraps up its 10-day joint military drill in Asian waters with Japan and other allies on Tuesday. The drill aims to deter a substantial threat in the region, Chinese intimidation toward Taiwan.
We try to deter aggression from some of these nations that are showing the burgeoning strength that maybe we haven't experienced in the past.
It's called the Anuilex drill, which included nearly 40 warships and dozens of aircraft in the Philippine Sea. The U.S. and Japanese forces were led by the nuclear-powered USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier. They were also joined by ships from Canada, Australia, and for the first time, Germany. On Tuesday, the Vinson was being shadowed by a Chinese Navy ship.
It is our operations, it is exercises like Anuilex, where we can demonstrate our capability to tell these nations that maybe today is not the day.
Increasing pressure by China on Taiwan is causing concern in both Japan and the U.S. A Chinese takeover of the island would place Japan's key sea lanes under Beijing's control. It would also threaten U.S. military bases in the region.
Faced with increasing aggression from Beijing, friends of Taiwan are quietly stepping up to help. This, according to a Reuters report. Details say at least seven nations are pitching in to aid Taiwan in building a submarine fleet. The U.S. and U.K. reportedly provided key technology, while experts from Australia, Canada, India, Spain, and South Korea will lend a hand. Once complete, the fleet will become part of the island's deterrence effort against possible invasions. The island has tried to purchase modern submarines in the past, but couldn't find a seller, with other nations fearful of angering Beijing. Taiwan's defense ministry called the new submarines crucial for national defense, while China's foreign ministry accused the assisting countries of, quote, playing with fire. Beijing used the same rhetoric when Chinese Communist Party head Xi Jinping met with U.S. President Biden virtually earlier this month. There, Xi Jinping warned Biden not to support Taiwan. China operates nearly 60 submarines, and Taiwan's navy deploys just four. The French National Assembly is backing Taiwan with a new resolution it passed on Monday. The pro-Taiwan resolution calls for the island's inclusion in international organizations. Taiwan thanked France for the gesture. The island's foreign ministry praised the resolution as historic. It says Taiwan and France have a long-standing relationship based on democracy, freedom, and human rights. The resolution supports Taiwan's participation in agencies such as the International Civil Aviation Organization, Interpol, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and the World Health Assembly. China claims Taiwan as its own territory. It rejects any attempts by the self-ruled island to participate in international organizations. French lawmakers promoted the resolution's passage on Twitter, but Beijing voiced strong opposition, claiming it conforms to U.S. pressure and that it won't have a real impact. The French Senate passed a similar resolution in May. Lawmakers from several European countries are visiting Taiwan, but the visit appears to be fanning the flames of Chinese aggression. 10 lawmakers from Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia are on an 8-day trip to the island. They met with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen on Monday. In a speech, one of the politicians stressed the shared values between Europe and Taiwan.
Democracy, human rights, and rule of law.
But the editor-in-chief of one of the Chinese Communist Party's, or CCP's, top media mouthpieces had something to say. Global Times newspaper editor Hu Xijing attacked the meeting on Twitter, asking how much Taiwan spent to invite the European lawmakers and criticizing them as low-end European political actors. The accusations sparked strong reactions online. One social media user posted a photo from earlier this year, capturing a meeting between China's foreign minister and Taliban leaders. The photo was shared alongside a comment seemingly mocking the editor, questioning how much the Chinese regime paid to invite the, quote, low-end Taliban political actors. Another netizen took issue with the editor's terminology, writing online that, quote, now we see how the Chinese Communist Party views European parliamentarians. He further questioned why the public still considers China a friend to Europe. A whistleblower is drawing attention to a Chinese nuclear power plant. The country's Taishan reactor reportedly has over 70 damaged fuel rods, far exceeding the officially released number of around 5. That's according to the official French broadcaster Radio France International, or RFI, quoting a whistleblower. Taishan nuclear plant shut down a reactor back in July due to damage to its uranium fuel rods. Fuel rods are sealed metal tubes which hold nuclear materials used to fuel the nuclear reactor. The plant is located in southern China's Guangdong province and is operated by China's General Nuclear Power Group and French energy firm EDF. The plant's operators claim the damage was possibly caused by transportation or operation and say it's within the normally accepted range. But the whistleblower says the damage may also be related to boiler design failures. He says a design flaw in the reactor's pressure vessel could be the cause. He reported the findings to the Commission for Independent Research and Information on Radioactivity, or CRI-IRID. According to RFI's exclusive interview with CRIRAAD's director Bruno Charillon, the whistleblower is a French worker for the nuclear power department and has access to the technical data on the core of the Taishan nuclear reactor. Charillon says, according to the whistleblower, the boiler issue was spotted in 2018 when the reactor was first put into operation. France's Nuclear Safety Authority did not respond to a request for comment. French energy firm EDF says the cause of the accident is still under investigation. A pro basketball player is celebrating his freedom by adopting the very word. Turkish native Enes Kanter, a center with the Boston Celtics, became a U.S. citizen on Monday. He's also legally changing his name to Enes Kanter Freedom. The 11-year NBA vet is a vocal critic for human rights issues and says his name change reflects that commitment.
That's the one thing I over my whole life I try to fight for. You know, when I came to America, to me it was so amazing because, you know, here there is freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of expression, and freedom of press, which I didn't have any of those with Turkey. You know, that's why I wanted to, and freedom also is the greatest thing that a human being can have. So that's why I wanted to make that word a part of me and carry it wherever I go.
For the past few months, Cantor has blasted the Chinese Communist Party for its treatment of Hong Kong, Taiwan, Tibet, and the Uyghur ethnic group. The chief of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service gave his first public speech on Tuesday at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Richard Moore talked about adapting to the changing nature of the threats faced by modern intelligence agencies with a focus on communist China.
In his first public speech since taking up the post, MI6 chief Richard Moore detailed his key priorities for the agency. The biggest one, he said, is China.
Adapting to a world affected by the rise of China is the single greatest priority for MI6. The Chinese Communist Party leadership increasingly favor bold and decisive action, justified on national security grounds. The days of Deng Xiaoping's hide your strength, bide your time are long over.
Moore said he sees areas of cooperation with Beijing, such as trade, but he stressed that China, as an authoritarian state, has different values from us.
Beijing has seriously eroded Hong Kong's one country, two systems framework and removed individual rights and freedoms in the name of national security. Its surveillance state has targeted the Uyghur population in Xinjiang, carrying out widespread human rights abuses, including the arbitrary detention of an estimated 1 million Muslims.
Moore noted that the Chinese regime has exported made-in-China surveillance technology to other governments. This, he said, serves to expand its web of authoritarian control worldwide.
In his speech, Moore warned of large-scale espionage operations against Britain and its allies. He said that Chinese spies exploit the open nature of our societies, including through social media operations, to distort public discourse and influence political decision-making. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News, London.
The MI6 head says it's unusual for the head of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service to give public speeches and be open, but that's something he wants to change. Now we turn to Australia. Its defense minister warns appeasement with China is not an option. Peter Dutton spoke at the National Press Club on Friday. He says China's alarming actions do not match its rhetoric.
By now, we're all familiar with the frequent claims of the Chinese government that it is committed to peace, cooperation and development. We're advised that it wants to uphold and ensure stability and prosperity in our region and the world. And yet we bear witness to a significant disconnect between the words and the actions, between the rhetoric and the well-known reality. Along with peoples of the Indo-Pacific and the world, Australians have watched, and we've watched very closely, as the Chinese government has engaged in increasingly alarming activities.
Dutton listed China's militarization of the South China Sea, recent aggression toward Taiwan, and the introduction of the national security law in Hong Kong to back his remarks. China-Australia relations hit a historic low last year after Beijing cut off ministerial contact with Australia and imposed hefty tariffs on many Australian exports, including wine, barley, beef, coal and seafood, a reaction to Canberra backing an inquiry into the origins of COVID-19 or the CCP virus. Dutton also said he believes Communist leader Xi Jinping's ambitions to take Taiwan by the 2040s are real, adding Xi Jinping will not stop there. The disputed Senkaku Islands are next. Senkaku Islands are located in the East China Sea. In Chinese, they are known as the Diaoyu Islands. Japan runs these islands, but Beijing claims it's their territory. Dutton says Beijing won't take over other countries, but wants them to be tributary states. And that is exactly what Australia has been fighting against since its federation. Dutton says the country has long fought for sovereignty and respect for the international rule of law. The two countries had an unpleasant encounter in August when Australia confirmed it spotted a Chinese intelligence ship sailing inside Australia's exclusive economic zone. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said, "Don't think for a second that we weren't keeping our eye on them, as they were seeking to keep an eye on us." The Prime Minister speaks highly of Dutton's grim warning over Taiwan, saying the warning is spot on. A documentary on Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests wins a major award in Taiwan. This award is known as the Oscars in the Chinese-speaking world. Taiwan's president says the award is the home of all free filmmakers.
A documentary on Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests won a high-profile award in Taiwan on Saturday. Taiwan's Golden Horse Awards is the region's equivalent of the Oscar Awards. Kiwi Chow's Revolution of Our Times was named Best Documentary at the award ceremony. The film documents Beijing's brutal repression in the streets of Hong Kong over the past 2 years. Chow sent a message from Hong Kong to express thanks. He said he dedicated the film to the city's people.
I truly hope this film belongs to every Hong Konger who holds a conscience and justice inside and shed tears for Hong Kong.
U.S. magazine Variety called the decision bold, as it's likely to enrage Beijing. Chow explained that pressure during filming was tremendous.
In the process, I was not only facing my own fear, but the most challenging part was to face the fear of others. That includes those of various media, independent reporters, and online media outlets. Many people struggled tremendously. Ever since the national security law, many refused to share their recordings or videos with me.
The Golden Horse Awards were founded in the 60s and take place annually in Taiwan. The Chinese Communist Party blocked China's movie industry from taking part in the awards after a Taiwanese director voiced support for Taiwan's independence. The Hong Kong documentary Revolution of Our Times was shown at the famed Cannes Film Festival earlier this year. The festival's director expressed pride over the film's showing, as it demonstrates how film can illuminate important moments in world news.
Members of the European Parliament on Monday were stunned to hear evidence of forced organ harvesting in China. They condemned the Chinese regime's practice of killing prisoners of conscience to supply organs for its lucrative transplant market. NTD's Eddie Atkin tells us more.
On Monday, the Subcommittee on Human Rights of the European Parliament discussed forced organ harvesting in China from prisoners of conscience.
In recent years, we have regularly heard about alleged organ harvesting across China, carried out on minority groups, including Falun Gong practitioners, Uyghurs, Tibetans, Muslims, Christians in detention.
The London-based China Tribunal ruled in 2019 that state-sanctioned forced organ harvesting has taken place in China for years on a significant scale. The former chair of the tribunal testified on Monday.
We applied the strictest evidential tests to how we would reach our conclusions. We applied what's called proof beyond reasonable doubt as the test. We took no regard of other people's opinions, and we worked our way through the evidence to see what was proved. And we came to the conclusion, beyond reasonable doubt, that forced organ harvesting was proved. What do I mean by that? It means taking people, the Falun Gong, killing them, and ripping out all their organs to sell on the commercial market.
Data showed that in the early 2000s, Chinese hospitals carried out up to 90,000 organ transplants per year, while the regime's official figures reported only 10,000. The tribunal found that adherents of the spiritual group Falun Gong were probably the principal source. China has become one of the favored destinations for people in need of organ transplants, as Chinese hospitals can find a matching organ in a matter of days.
How is it possible on earth that we face such a huge crime committed by this country on so many people, so many innocent people, who paid with their lives? It is really unbelievable.
The committee chair said there will be a follow-up.
I think we need to dig deeper into the question of what leverage the EU has over China and how we can follow this up through our legal systems with what is happening in China today.
Eddie Aitken, NTD News.
And that's all for today's China Focus. But before you go, here's a short glimpse into Wednesday's special report.
Beijing is pushing a unique financial campaign urging Chinese citizens and businesses to start using digital currency across the nation. And once that's done, it has plans to promote that digital currency worldwide, eventually looking to achieve international use. But why go through all the trouble? It may be part of Beijing's long game, who challenged the U.S. dollar as the most used in the world.
I believe that the adoption of their central bank digital currency is cancerous to the West. I think legislators and or the Fed should simply outlaw the ownership of the Chinese central bank digital currency in America.
But China's digital yuan boasts a few key differences from other currencies, like being issued by a state-controlled central bank. But what could a widespread transition to financial cyberspace mean for Chinese society? Tune into this week's special report to find out more.